traveler.
I've waited a long time for this moment, Wesley.
So all those things I saw in the Habakkuk, my father, and the things he said to me, that was your doing?
I merely opened the door for you. What you experienced came from your own mind, your own spirit, if you wish. I hoped that you would open your mind to new possibilities, and you did. You pulled yourself out of time, don't you see? You've evolved to a new level. You're ready to explore places where thought and energy combine in ways you can't even imagine. And I will be your guide, if you like.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where three Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
Benjamin Young beaming in.
And now, for this week's conundrum, for the love of Wesley.
Well, we've got lots to share, especially with our grandstanding guest, one Benjamin Young. Listeners, we always love having him back on the series whenever he can fit us into his busy, busy schedule.
Glad to be here.
I can tell. But
he's phoning it in already.
He's not even Skyping it in at this point.
He's on a rotary phone.
He's got like the tin cups attached with the string.
Hello.
But before we delve into one of the all-time greatest characters of Star Trek, Cam, there's a little bit of Star Trek news to share that I find is getting a little bit of traction on social media, and I think it's not as big a story as some people have to say. But essentially, confirmation that Star Trek Beyond, which is coming out July 22nd, there are reshoots going on right now, Cam. Cam, tell me, is this a big deal?
It depends. I mean, sometimes reshoots can be the sign of a problem, but also, reshoots are pretty much scheduled into most major blockbusters nowadays.
Yeah.
Marvel builds them into their actual schedule to always go back and reshoot everything because they make their movies in the editing room. So it really just depends. I mean, it could be good, it could be bad, it could be nothing.
The one thing that we do find out is that they are adding a new character to the show, somebody representing, head of the Federation Council. So it's interesting if she's going to have more to do with it. But honestly, I think somebody spelled it out pretty succinctly on a social media post that I saw. It's very unlikely that the head of the Federation Council do much more than have, a scene on a view screen.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm...
And she is an actress of note.
Yeah. Sheree Agdashalu. I actually did see her on 24 Season 2 back in the day. She was actually cast in Serenity, but her scenes were cut from that particular film. But she is actually an actress that I am a big fan of, so I think it'll be great that she's entering the Star Trek universe. I kind of hope she's an alien because the thing that kind of bugs me about the Federation is how human-centric it appears to be, especially when it comes to the Federation Council. Mm-hmm. Do you recall, we do have Kurtwood Smith, who played the alien president.
He was awesome.
There was that very lame president in the Deep Space Nine two-parter back on Earth.
I don't even remember.
He had almost like this kind of snout. He was very meek kind of council president, but right. I hope she kicks ass.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it's going to be a largely expository role.
Yes.
So I'm not expecting a lot out of it. It may just be to make clear sort of the ties to Starfleet. For all we know, in what they shot already, the Starfleet aspect was a little vague.
Yeah.
You never know what it could be.
Benjamin, is she going to get your butt in the seat this summer?
I mean, if she doesn't, I can't see what will.
Folks, he is phoning it in. It's true.
Tyler, Ben is a very big House of Sand and Fog fan, so he's down.
But, I mean, let's, mosey on into the actual topic of the evening. We'll be discussing Wesley Crusher.
That's right.
One of the greatest characters when it comes to derision, I would say, among the Star Trek community. But I think we all have maybe kind of different thoughts about this growing up. Cam, you only got into Star Trek, you know, kind of in your adult years.
Right.
But Benjamin, I recall, you know, quite vividly your own thoughts about Wesley that you've shared with me before. And tell me a little bit about your thoughts about Wesley Crusher when you were growing up and just, you know, how you approach this character and maybe how your own feelings about him have maybe changed over the last 20 or 25 years.
Well, as you guys know, when I first started watching Trek, I was probably around the same age that Wesley would have been on the show. So it was kind of neat to see a boy running around the bridge. I thought it introduced an interesting element, being that you had the kind of stoic Picard bunch of you know adults running around the bridge. And then you have this boy who Picard has absolutely no idea how to deal with.
And was he at the time, and I'm talking about Wesley here, was he something that you could relate to, or was it just cool to see that, hey, it's possible a kid could be on a starship?
It was just, it just added something that I guess I hadn't seen before on the show, although that was a pretty, I mean, when did he first appear? That was pretty early
Encounter at Farpoint, the first episode.
Yes, yeah. No, but I mean, like, he appeared quite frequently in the first season.
Oh yeah, quite a lot. He would often save the day in the first season.
Right.
Or play like a huge prominent role in sort of the solving of the problem.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, obviously a lot of people felt he was annoying in the first season.
Although he was a heartthrob. Like, a lot of girls were really into Wesley.
Oh, really?
We have a friend, actually, who we go to the Vegas con with, who, I mean, like, Wesley was like her heartthrob, you know, at her young age. And like, when she met Will Wheaton, she said she was an absolute mess.
Was this Shelley Ross?
No, it wasn't Shelley Ross. But so, like, you know, Wesley obviously had value in that regard. I'm just curious, like, Ben, was not the heartthrob aspect, but sort of just seeing a young person, did it have, like, an effect on you just seeing yourself represented? Because Star Trek was not known for representing kids well.
True. I mean, at that time, I was huge into computers. I was a pretty big nerd back then. And to see...
Back then?
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe a little bit less so back then.
Now you're a podcaster.
Yeah. So, you know, to see him sitting in the captain's seat and interacting with the crew like that, mm-hmm. you know, just it was something I could relate to at that time.
Could you also relate to adults yelling at you for being in the adult area of the ship?
Yes, I got yelled at often, but not for that. That was kind of neat. But then looking back at some of the episodes and watching them now from an age like my age now, it's he's more annoying to me.
Right.
Like, it's kind of like a whiny. And you know how his acting is. Sometimes Will Wheaton's acting is.
Well, and I think we should also, maybe should have said this at the top, but like, I don't think we're here to just bash on Wesley the whole, you know, episode. We want to kind of discuss, you know, where this character was going and why he may have been a target for derision, as opposed to just like, just say, hey, you suck. So, hey, Will Wheaton, if you're listening, I like you, you know, I think you're a cool cat.
I want to be your friend.
Well, there you go. But I think we've kind of, Will Wheaton's even discussed how there's issues with this character from the get-go.
Right.
So, and I think we're just trying to take a critical analysis.
I mean, I liked how he progressed through the seasons. I mean,
he was one of the few characters, you know, that had a very, very distinct character arc throughout the course of the series.
That it was at least loosely set up in the beginning.
We'll talk about that in more detail. Yeah. I 100% disagree with you.
Okay.
But, Cam, I'm curious about what your thoughts are. Because, I mean, you would have been aware of Wesley Crusher even before you started watching The Next Generation.
Right, yeah.
What were your first impressions of him?
I found him mostly harmless.
Yeah.
You know, there would be some episodes, which we'll get to later, that I really laughed a lot at. Sort of, you know, I found when they actually built episodes around Wesley, it all kind of went to hell.
Sure.
But him as a character, I thought he was okay. He sort of has that quality, though, that a lot of child actors of, say, like, sort of the classic Disney movies have. Not like the high-quality ones like Mary Poppins, but sort of the lower tier.
Escape from Witch Mountain?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, where it's kind of that, like, golly gee whiz, innocent kid sort of act.
Right.
Which is now so outdated. Like, now they tend to go with more realistic with kids. Whereas in those days, they made them kind of these...
Gee, golly whiz.
Yeah, it was very, like, Disney-fied versions of kids.
Yeah.
And Gene Roddenberry had modeled Wesley on himself to a certain degree, so there was at least it was a little bit autobiographical, at least in what Gene Roddenberry wanted to kind of envision his 14-year-old self as being like, the idealized version.
So, complete with genius powers.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was humble about that. He said he wasn't a genius.
Yeah.
So.
You would have been aware of him before you started watching the show.
I knew the name.
Okay.
That was it. Like, I didn't really know that much about fan derision.
I knew that's what I was curious about.
I heard the odd fan joke, but it wasn't...
Sure.
Like,
if I had never seen Star Wars, I would know that Jar Jar Binks is hated.
Yeah.
I just kind of thought a few people made fun of Wesley, but I didn't realize it was this sort of...
widespread.
Yeah, okay. Across the franchise hatred, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for myself, I started watching Next Generation around season 5, I believe. Mm-hmm. I was about 9 years old, maybe 8 years old. And whenever I'd see Wesley episodes in syndication... The reason I took a step back a bit is because I think he kind of represented an earlier era of Next Generation when it wasn't at its best. So it's when Riker didn't have a beard, Geordi wasn't the chief engineer. So whenever I saw Wesley, I was just kind of like, eh.
Pulaski was on the show.
Exactly. I wasn't a kind of fan of that era of the series. But I didn't really find him... this horrible, annoying character at all. Like, as a kid, I thought it was cool that there's a kid on the ship. Didn't bother me. Fast forward, you know, when I'm watching Next Generation as an adult, boy, I gotta cringe at the lines that these writers gave Will Wheaton to read. And
yeah.
I really wish, just for the sake of, like, that 15-year-old kid who was playing Wesley at the time, I really wish, you know, maybe fans would have been... more thoughtful about the fact that it's not that the actor was stinky.
Mm-hmm.
Because, look, I think that Stand By Me is a great showcase for Will Wheaton. Like, he was fantastic in that movie.
Yeah.
I wish fans would have appreciated that what he was being asked to do by the writers was nearly impossible based on the lines. And, like, how does anybody say those lines without it sounding awful, though? So I agree. He's not a great character early on, but he does progress throughout the series into one that I actually like and I can appreciate.
And Wheaton has said, like, the writers made Wesley very insufferable, having him kind of be the know-it-all.
Yes.
No one wants a kid know-it-all on a ship of, like, adults.
Who are supposed to be the most competent people in the galaxy, essentially.
Not only that, but there's a lot of moments where Picard and Riker, like, dismiss him straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Are just like, oh, God, they just ignore him. It's like, you do not want to see the character whose people are like, God, this guy's annoying.
Well,
kind of nattering at them.
But it's funny that even, like, the characters within the show found him annoying. I think that would only added to fan derision of the character if, you know, if Riker just ignores him, if Picard tells him to shut up all the time, then of course fans are going to, you know, react that way when they see, you know, this kid at a convention. And Will Wheaton said, like, it was tough, like... he would go to these conventions and, like, people would just, like, attack him and, like, be very insulting. And I don't blame him for kind of eschewing these conventions and not going any longer.
Do you guys think that the writers learned something when they wrote Jake Sisko's character as a boy on a space station?
Well, I think what they took away here, because you look at other kid characters there. I don't think Alexander was particularly well-written either. I think there's maybe something in that writer's room where they did not really understand how to write for kids. Why don't we just segue into kind of the next topic here about, like, maybe what was going wrong with this character. I think by the time they got to Jake Sisko, Benjamin, they figured out that you can't have, like, this character as, like, this boy genius who's able to do everything. Jake Sisko's a normal kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with issues like loneliness because there's only one other person his age who's a Ferengi, and his father doesn't want him hanging out with his bad influence. It's like that's sort of stuff that, you know, average kids can relate to, and then adults as parents, they can relate to it as well. I think it was genius on their parts not to make Jake Sisko a genius, essentially.
Well, I mean, but you're not saying that geniuses can't exist.
No, but do you want to watch a Mozart interact with people, you know, just people that are, because I think essentially, like, he was supposed to be this whiz, essentially, who could outthink all the other adults on the ship.
To be fair, Doogie Howser was popular.
That's true. We should have, you know, hired Neil Patrick Harris in this role. Would that have solved everything?
But then on the flip side, the sitcom Phenom only lasted like one or two seasons.
I'm unaware of this entire series.
Starring Judith Light, and then I don't know the name of the girl who was a tennis pro.
Alyssa Milano?
No, God, no. It was some blonde actress. I don't know.
All right. But, I'm curious about your guys' thoughts, because if we're going to talk about, like, what went wrong, let's just give a little bit of background on the character. Cam, you had mentioned earlier that Gene Roddenberry admitted that Wesley was modeled on himself, albeit, like, an idealized version of his 14-year-old self. And then Bob Justman suggested during the development of the series that they switch it from, you know, a boy character to a woman character. And so they turned it into Leslie Crusher for a little while before switching back to Wesley. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's some interesting quotes that Will Wheaton says. You know, he has been to conventions, he has given interviews, and he says that it is not an especially well-written character in that first season. The writers essentially just could not execute the idea of him. And I think that's kind of telling about what was going on in early Next Generation altogether. Gene Roddenberry is the idea man.
Yeah.
And if people are trying to execute that vision and he's very particular about it, I think it's going to be tough for them to convince Gene Roddenberry that maybe he's kind of mistaken about the direction that he wanted to take this character.
There's also the issue, I mean, Gene Roddenberry was an old school TV guy. Kids in old school TV were often obnoxious. And if you go back to the original series, like episodes like Miri or And the Children Shall Lead, the kids are really annoying.
Yeah.
So you have Gene Roddenberry kind of running the first couple seasons of TNG with a child character based on himself in the lead cast, often saving the day. And I just think Gene Roddenberry didn't know how to write a child character that wasn't cloying.
Yeah, and the issue
and
that...
To be fair, it is tough.
Here's the thing. Writing child characters nowadays, boy, you know, there's so many characters on TV that still gets, you know, to be the target of derision among fans. Just because, I think it's hard for a 40-year-old dude sitting in a writer's room to write for a 12 or 13-year-old. Mm-hmm. And then to make sure you have, like, an actor that can really pull it off, and then make sure that whatever lines that actor is reading. I mean, the numbers are stacked against you if you want to have, like, a good, interesting child character on your TV show.
Yeah. It's an annoying combination of him being too innocent and gullible.
But a know-it-all.
Yeah, so that combination doesn't really work. Like, it would almost have been better if he was smug or you know.
Yeah.
I would have loved smug Wesley. Like, that would have been...
He could be pretty smug, though.
That's true. Oh, on his final episode of Next Generation, Journey's End.
Yeah.
He started that first half of the episode. That was super smug Wesley.
Oh, yeah. He's a total dick in that episode.
That was great, but it would have been better. It would have been interesting to see his character like that from the start.
Interesting or grating?
Well, I don't know. Like, if he's a know-it-all, shouldn't he be smug or feel that he's superior to everyone else? Because he doesn't.
He should have been like the doctor who was hanging out with the traveler in Where No One Has Gone Before. That should have been like the attitude that
Kaczynski?
He had. Yeah, Kaczynski.
Yeah, Kaczynski looked like a crack addict. Like, that guy's like so sweaty.
But what a great casting choice to have that guy. I thought he was great.
I would have liked to have seen Kaczynski again, like just like that arrogance and like
they name drop him in a later episode.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. What I love about the sort of earlier seasons of TNG is that they cast like actors who look like they were just like taken out the back alley of the studio. It's like, who are these people? These don't look like Starfleet personnel.
It was the 80s, Cam.
It was the 80s.
So we've got the odds stacked against you if you want to have like a child actor on your show.
Yeah.
There are definitely things that went wrong with not only the writer's room, but I don't know, Cam, what else may have gone wrong here?
Well, I mean, Wheaton himself has blamed the writers often for Wesley and said, like, the directors that he worked with, only one, he said, didn't treat him like a prop.
I believe it, though, because you see his delivery. I don't know how any of these directors are directing him, because the job of the director, of course, I mean, they're dealing with, like, where cameras are going, that sort of stuff, but you're also telling the actors, this is what I'm looking for. So much of the delivery that Will Wheaton gives on the show is just like, dear Lord, what director is telling him to do it that way? Or what director is not working with him to make it better at this point?
And it's kind of a well-known fact, like, great child performances come from great directors.
Yeah.
And often a great co-star to kind of, adult co-star to kind of bring the talent forward. Like, I think Wesley's at his best often when he's paired with scenes with Patrick Stewart. Because Patrick Stewart is such a master actor that he can kind of get good performances out of Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
Whereas scenes where it's just Wesley kind of on his own, reacting to things or whatever, it can be really, really painful.
Well, I'm also curious, like, Benjamin, there's a particular character that I think you brought up in one of our very first episodes, but if we're talking about what went wrong with Wesley, do you think certain relationships with certain recurring guests maybe played into that a little bit?
I know you guys are pushing me to bring up the Traveler.
No, I was talking about Ashley Judd, but if you want to talk about the Traveler, go for it.
I was watching that episode, and you guys probably watched it as well recently. It was creepy.
Are you talking about where no one goes has gone before? Yeah, yeah.
The relationship between from the onset of the Traveler entering into the scene was just, it was weird.
Yeah,
it was kind of
it's tone deaf. Like, it's like they don't quite know how to direct this scene, and so it's this awkward kind of character just immediately off the bat kind of getting handsy with Wesley. Yes.
You know, hand on the shoulders, you know, like pushing him along.
His three fingers on the shoulders.
Yeah. And why, it doesn't really explain why Wesley has this innate care for this character.
Well, yeah, of course, like, he's shouting, he's my friend. He isn't captain. I know he isn't, you know, like when they suspect he could be a danger to the ship.
It's, and obviously, like, we would see going forward that the relationship with the Travelers, like the two of them were kind of like minds and had similar abilities. But I feel like they knew something was special about Wesley, but they didn't know what it was in that episode. So they're kind of like, okay, we got to kind of be vague about it, but we've got to somehow indicate that this character is special. But it's not directed in a way where we really understand what's going on. It just seems kind of creepy and strange.
Yeah, well, the whole thing that, I mean, I wrote in my notes, you know, by the time we get to the final Wesley and Traveler episode is Wesley's abilities equal magic. There's nothing science fiction about it. Why is this human, you know, able to bend space and time to his will? Well, the Traveler can. But he's an alien. And I could buy that there's like an alien species that has this ability. But it's just like he's genetically a human.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something special about like Jack Crusher that we didn't know about? Beverly Crusher is exceptional at her job, but
she doesn't seem that surprised by it all either.
No,
and the problem is what happens in this episode sets the tone for basically his character from that point on.
All the major developments of Wesley Crusher are tied to that episode
for the next several years. It goes back to what happens here, and that's unfortunate in a lot of ways.
And I think I could be more forgiving of it if, in the other, because we'll talk about the other Traveler episodes, Remember Me and Journey's End. The Traveler, I think it might have maybe worked if we developed that relationship, but it doesn't. In both of those episodes, the Traveler just shows up as a third act problem solve.
Yeah.
And is just like, oh, Wesley, you know, I'm going to help you with this now. And it's like, okay, sure. Like, it's a total deus ex Travelera.
Sure. But Traveler doesn't feel like a fleshed out character.
He's not a character. He's a plot device.
Or like a somebody who has a fleshed out relationship with Wesley.
No.
Either. So it just doesn't work. He does give like creepy vibes, like in Journey's End, where he transforms from an Aboriginal man into the Traveler, and he says, "I can't tell you how long I've been waiting for this."
Or "I've been watching you."
Yeah, it's just like, it's so like, are the writers doing this on purpose to be creepy? You know, like, I don't know.
Like, what if, you know, Wesley's powers had kind of been, you know, like in Kes in early Voyager, where Kes's telekinetic powers are kind of out of control. Like, what if Wesley had grappled through his episodes with his own powers, and the Traveler was kind of this silent kind of guardian watching over him? Something like that might have worked.
Yeah.
But it's the fact he just pops up in episodes that aren't really about him in the first place, just as a third act kind of, you know, surprise.
Remember Me, that's a Beverly-centric episode.
Really good episode, too.
I thought it was great, but then all of a sudden it has to do with the Traveler and Wesley at the end. And I'm just like, okay.
The problem with those episodes is it alludes to some unknown, unseen power that Wesley has, which is never explained.
And that's why it bothers me. We're watching a sci-fi show, and it just turns into magic.
Yeah.
A fan of sci-fi as magic, you know?
I just think it's strange too. At the end of Journey's End, Wesley is like, "Well, I'm going away with the Traveler," but we don't even get like a scene of him like phasing into a different dimension or something. It's just like he just kind of walks off screen. You're like, "Okay, well, see you later, Wesley."
Yeah, he quits the academy, which is he's been working on towards his whole life.
Yeah,
to go gallivanting across the galaxy.
But I'm okay with that, though, because, well, let's maybe talk a little bit about Wesley's arc, and we can come back to other issues with it. But I'm okay with where Wesley ends up, because here, and Ron Moore brought this up, he wrote Journey's End. He's explaining how all we hear is how Wesley's super special, there's just something amazing about him, yet all he wants to do, all he aspires to be, is a Starfleet officer.
Yeah.
He wants to type in coordinates on the helm. Like, that's what this super special person is destined to do. You know, and so that's why I think it made sense for him to be unhappy being in Starfleet, like wanting to seek something out, get away from his parents' legacy, and do something exceptional. So I'm okay with him leaving on the terms that he did. I just think Journey's End was one of the worst episodes of season 7, though.
Well, like, and that's saying something with Sub Rosa also that season, and Masks.
You know, I love Sub Rosa, though.
Oh, boy.
Now, that's a great one.
But don't you think, like, from the get-go, and especially with Wesley's relationship with Captain Picard, is that he's being groomed for something great in Starfleet?
You're talking about the Traveler.
Well, no, but I agree. And I think that Picard relationship is probably the most significant relationship that he has throughout the series.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, that relationship that he has with Dr. Crusher, it she seems like a...
Like a sitcom mom.
Yeah.
Like a doting mother.
Yeah.
Like, well, even a helicopter parent, like in Journey's End, when she's contacting the Admiral at Starfleet Academy, saying, your grades are down, Wesley, he told me. Just like, but it just seems like almost aloof in a way. Let's be a matter of fact about this. In season 2, she takes off and leaves her son on the ship for him to be the helmsman for a year before she returns back. She returns, and then all of a sudden she's worried about him going on dates in 10 forward in episode Evolution. I'm just like, okay. I don't know. It just doesn't seem as if they're all that close.
Well, it doesn't seem like the writers had any interest in writing a mother-son relationship.
No, not at all.
It was more about how can we use Wesley to kind of bounce off Picard, because we saw from episode 1 Picard doesn't like children.
Yeah. But it's interesting to see how that relationship develops, because all throughout season 1, I mean, even at Data Lore, which is like one of the highlights of season 1.
Yeah, that's the Shut Up Wesley episode.
That's the infamous Shut Up Wesley episode. So it's interesting to see how by the time we get to Final Mission... Which I would put that, you know, up there about the all-time West-centric episodes. That's the one where, of course, Picard and Wesley crash land on that desert planet and search for water.
That was a great episode.
I just think it's such, like, the finale where, you know, or the climax where Wesley's explained to Picard, like, what an influence he is and how everything he does, it's, you know, to do Picard proud. I thought that was one of Wes's best moments.
You know what his worst was in that episode?
Tell me, Cam.
You listen to Captain Picard.
Even in a great episode like that, like, I can't believe they're giving him lines like that to say. Like, what else is Will Wheaton supposed to do, like, with something like that?
There's no way to say that without it sounding cringeworthy.
Every once in a while, there's a stark reminder of where Wesley came from.
Yeah.
With those lines.
But, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting, like, just for research on this, I've been looking back at old Will Wheaton quotes and his blog posts, and he was explaining how, you know, it's so tough for him to go back and watch these old episodes because all he sees is, like, this arrogant teenager who didn't really realize that a lot of the other actors on the series, they were stuck reading a lot of technobabble the whole time, too. He's just, like... He was sick of it. He didn't want to read technobabble. He wanted to be like a full character in his own right. And he just wasn't getting that. And that's part of the reason why he ended up asking to leave the show.
I mean, we were talking before about his relationship with Picard. And I think one of the great character episodes for Wesley is actually an episode that I don't think people really talk about. And that is the Samaritan Snare, which is the episode where Picard has to go and get heart surgery. And Wesley is going along because he's going to Starfleet Academy or whatever. And it's just the two of them talking for an episode.
Right.
Really. You know, and it's just, there's no drama to it. You could say it's a bad episode in that sense.
Is this the one where he's actually applying versus other candidates to get into Starfleet Academy?
No, that is, that's Coming of Age.
Okay.
No, in this episode, it's just he's accompanying Picard. They're both going to the same place, Starfleet headquarters. Picard's going for a medical operation, which is like basically a heart, you know, heart transplant or whatever, heart surgery. And Picard's kind of nervous about it, and, you know, his ego's a little... He doesn't like to look fragile. And it's just the two of them on a six-hour trip in a shuttle, just talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, he tells Wesley about being stabbed by the Nausicaan. That's the first time we learn that story. And it's just two characters relating to each other. So you could say this is a boring episode in terms of, like, dramatic stakes or anything, everything like that. But... and it does end pretty clunky with like Picard's surgery going awry and Pulaski having to rush to save him. Like that's
all crap. Wait, you mean Wesley didn't rush to save him?
No, no, he disappeared from the episode. Right. But it's so in that regard, it's not a great episode. But this section of it, I think, is really valuable, and you see a lot of the great things that would come and then pay off in Final Mission.
Well, and I mean, there are other highlights when it comes to the Wesley character. Not many of them came during those first, you know, 3.5 seasons that he appeared on the show.
I'll defend Coming of Age.
Okay, you do that. I'm curious. Defend it right now.
I really enjoy this episode.
Did you really?
Yes, I do.
Okay. To me, it kind of ruined whatever credibility Starfleet Academy might have.
Well, it's a questionable school.
But go on.
But what I enjoyed about it was the relationship between Wesley and the Benzite.
Okay.
I actually really like the Benzite. And I would just like to announce, I want a Benzite on the bridge in 2017.
Okay.
That relationship I found fascinating. What I don't like about this episode is the two girl cadets or whatever.
You're sexist? Okay, I get it.
What I'm saying is they don't get anything to do. They're dismissed, basically. One of them is like, boy, I sure have to try hard. Good thing you're cute, Wesley. You know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's really about Wesley and the Benzite. But I really enjoy just seeing Wesley problem solving. And you can see, like, a character flaw of his and why he doesn't succeed is because he helps others. But it's done in a way that I didn't feel was, like, cloying or obnoxious.
Sure.
So I appreciated that.
Well, I'm just glad that Nog was able to get into Starfleet Academy his first try.
Yeah, I guess that burning room or whatever didn't scare Nog. That's like a death trap. Like, what is
that?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a very bizarre. Like, I don't really enjoy their take on what Starfleet Academy training would be or whatever. It's ridiculous, but yeah.
But I'm just curious about, like, his own career trajectory. Did you guys even understand, like, the difference between an acting ensign versus a full ensign who then has to go back to Starfleet Academy? Like, it didn't make any sort of sense.
Acting ensign's not official, though.
He was in the gray uniform. He was acting ensign. When they put him in the red uniform, Picard said, "You're now a full ensign." And then he ends up going to Starfleet Academy after that.
No, but Picard can't give any official...
He gave him a field commission.
Yeah.
Is that enough to, I mean, to bypass studies at school, though?
Well, I mean, O'Brien was walking around as a lieutenant for years.
Sorry, I forget how ridiculous his cameos are just rewatching some of the old episodes. Yeah. It's reduced to, like, one-liners.
Yeah.
Hey, Colin Meaney is walking away with a couple $1,000 every time he gets Beverly to say two lines.
Beverly doesn't even give him the respect of calling him chief. He's just like, O'Brien, thanks, yeah. O'Brien. Walks off.
Yeah, it's pretty
so good.
But, just moving forward, you know, with Wesley, I do like him more consistently after he leaves the Enterprise.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Cam, you're not a huge fan of the game.
No, I like the game.
I watched that today.
I thought you told me before you didn't like it.
No, I thought it was enjoyable. Okay.
I thought it was a great showcase for Wesley. It's also just kind of cool, high concept sci-fi. Where, of course, you know, Riker, the old horn dog, a woman convinces him to wear these goggles, and there's a game inside. And he essentially gets hypnotized, and the rest of the crew along with him whenever they play the game. Wesley, he's just not amused by these little things, so he doesn't ever put the goggles on and play the game, though. But it's a great showcase for him, and actually having, like, a relationship, a potentially romantic one, with one Ashley Judd.
Robin Loeffler.
A little bit too sweet, though. A little bit too dripping with, you know, sweetness. The dialogue between him and Robin Loeffler.
Well, I like how you must treat your girlfriends.
I don't know. Coming after the Dauphin, I don't know if I could ever say that that was too sweet.
No. Yeah, you would have preferred more ape fights on the dates that Wesley goes to?
I'll take an ape fight any day of the week.
But, I mean, to me, like, he leaves the ship, and he's coming back, and he's actually got, like, interesting things to do. And here's the key here. It's not like the writers are sitting in the room saying, yeah, let's make Wesley just say some random line to pay the actor or something. Like, they're like, they came up with, like, a solid West-centric episode and gave it to him.
But I love how he is a neuroscientist, a positronic brain specialist.
Right.
He can fix Data's severed positronic net. He can identify what sections of the brain that the thing is, you know.
Let's say, you know, well, okay. It doesn't even have to be hypothetical. It's established in Nemesis that Wesley left the Traveler and he's back in Starfleet.
They left the Traveler like they were dating or something?
Well, Tyler, that brings up a Cam fiction moment.
God.
So, yes, as you say,
Can I get the Cliff Notes version of your cam fiction?
When we see Wesley and Nemesis, he's wearing Starfleet outfit at the wedding, right? Well, I mean, there was a scene that actually explained, a cut scene from Nemesis, where Wesley actually explained that he was just been assigned to the USS Titan. This scene was cut, so it's out of continuity. This is where we get to the cam fiction. Now, in the novel A Time for War, A Time for Peace, Wesley's Nemesis uniform is explained as him showing up at the wedding naked, having expected a Betazoid wedding, and the uniform was lent to him. In this scenario, Wesley was still a traveler and had not returned to Starfleet.
That's actually kind of interesting. I find that clever.
Now, okay. Because that scene is cut from Nemesis, we can actually pretend that is the case. Wesley showed up naked to the wedding.
Go ahead and pretend all you wish. But, okay, what I was getting at, though, is Wesley's back in Starfleet. Who do you imagine to be the more competent officer? A mature Wesley Crusher? Or, you know, Data as we met him in, like, season one? Like, who is, like, the smarter, savvier, more mature officer that you would want to have on your bridge?
I don't know about Wesley, man. He's a little flighty.
He is, yeah.
I don't want him just taken off at the first sign of trouble or whatever.
Did you watch the cut scene from Nemesis?
I did, yeah.
All he does is he catches a woman in his eye and he, like, races away from, like, Beverly and Jean-Luc. So I do agree he is a little flighty.
Yeah.
I think there's potential for the character. Like, if we saw the trajectory he was on, I mean, I think The First Duty was another great showcase for Wesley. Here's the thing. It's just all this internal conflict that a young man's going through and that mm-hmm. Picard can relate to, of course, gone through that, as it's alluded to by Boothby, the groundskeeper.
Who was originally going to be the Traveler, too.
Really?
Yes.
Dear Lord.
They thought about having the Traveler would be revealed to be Boothby.
It'd be great if, like, every, like, time Wesley comes back, oh, Robin Leffler, it's the Traveler. You know? Like, okay, well, maybe that kind of ruins my whole thoughts and praise for The First Duty. But I just like how Picard really tells the guy off. He's just like, no, you have your first duty. You know, a lie of omission is still a lie. Mm-hmm. Wesley's, I choose not to answer.
That was a great exchange between those two.
There's fireworks in that episode. Yeah. Like, as much as people ridicule Will Wheaton's acting on that show, when you get an episode like First Duty, he brings it.
He's given good material, and I think that's the key here. If Will Wheaton's still listening to this podcast after we've made fun of this character, Will, when you're given good material, you're good with Wes. That's coming from Tyler.
He demonstrated good emotional range there. Like, he actually genuinely makes you feel uncomfortable, like, when you're watching that scene.
Yeah.
How much helps having him opposite Nick Locarno, who's so much more annoying?
You're not a big fan of bad boy Nick Locarno?
This brings up another cam fiction moment. Nick Locarno, according to the novella Revenant, was later assimilated by the Borg.
Well, there you go. Did he end up in the Delta Quadrant somehow and cross paths with one Tom Paris?
I like to think so.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. What was the character's name that died in the crash again?
I think it was like Dennis or like, Joe or something.
Something like that. Anyways.
Joe Dennis.
His dad looked familiar. Was he a recurring character somewhere?
No, but I think he was more of a character actor. Like,
maybe, yeah.
I just remember like the entire scene during that hearing, like, keep flashing back to his dad making the same face.
Oh, the furrowed brow?
Yeah. It's like, okay. Speaking of directors not giving direction, they should have told that guy to change it up a bit. I think they just kept using the same shot over and over again to express the father's dismay at the death of his son.
The two admirals are great, too.
Yeah, well, the Vulcan Admiral, he's actually a well-known character actor. He played Elaine's boss on Seinfeld.
That is where I knew him from.
Yeah.
That's right.
Top of the muffin to you.
Yeah. No, he was great in that.
Mr. Littman?
Yeah, he was great in that episode.
I think what we're getting at here, essentially, is that's a great showcase for Wesley. It's a great solid hour of Star Trek.
But again, tying back to the theme, it's him opposite Patrick Stewart.
I absolutely agree. And it's amazing to see. You know, even if I did not like Journey's End, mm-hmm. I loved Wesley's scenes with Patrick Stewart, you know.
What about his ones with LeVar Burton?
Not awkward at all. I love how everybody kept referring to him kind of like throwing shade to Geordi throughout the episode as the incident. But that was a great, that was a pretty memorable scene about saying, yeah, obviously this sucks. Yeah. It's like, Geordi's like, whoa.
But they've, like, snapped before, because there's that episode, Sarek, where he's like, they're snapping at each other. It's
yeah.
like, they have this weird, like, angry sort of frenemyship.
Do you want my help or not? Not with that attitude.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, though, because I think it's because it's that's Wesley's best friend on the ship. It's Geordi.
God help him.
Well, you know, but so I think, you know, when you're friends with somebody, you generally can push them a little bit more than just a casual acquaintance and use a bit more biting language. Like he said to Geordi and Sarek, the only girlfriend you can get is on the holodeck. You know.
In that exact voice. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Does Geordi seem to you like a guy who could take that?
No, he seems very sensitive.
Yeah.
And he seems very quick to snap at people.
I mean, it's got to be demoralizing getting, like, dressed down by, like, a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
Wow.
It's not like Geordi is that old. He's in his, what, like, early 30s on the show?
It's kind of tough to say.
It is tough with the visor.
Geordi's a bit like a big brother, almost.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, kind of a mentor, but at the same time.
But a big brother that's treated like an underling.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to me Geordi started off as, like, a 25-year-old, and then two seasons later, like, if you told me he was 40, I'd be like, yeah, sounds about right. Yeah. You know, I think just maybe that gold uniform and being in charge of engineering.
What was he doing when he was wearing the red uniform anyways? Like, what was he doing?
Same thing as Worf was.
Yeah.
Which was nothing.
Well, he was the navigator. So essentially, like, Wes took over for Geordi after Geordi got shuffled down to main engineering.
One hell of a promotion.
Yeah, well.
He's running the ship, basically, after he goes downstairs.
Yeah.
Hey, he had it in his ability this whole time. We just didn't know. Like, did he ever show any interest in engineering before, like, in season one?
Did he show any interest in anything?
How did he go from ops to running the engineering? Main engineering, like, that seems like quite the jump. Do you go back to school for that, or?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, took an extra class at the academy.
One extra class.
Yeah, Boothby really mentored him for that, you know, one semester. I don't know. Hey, it's a summer away. Who knows?
So, I want to know what your guys' take is on some of the episodes, because I feel like when people talk about Wesley and put him down, whatever, they are not talking about these episodes we're talking about. They're not talking about Final Mission or First Duty. They're talking about episodes like Justice.
Yeah.
Or the Dauphin.
Yeah, okay. So, Justice, I sat down, prepared for the worst. I found at least the first half of that episode incredibly amusing.
I love it.
Like, just everything about it. Like, hearty laughs all around. Wesley describing his baseball bat.
Yeah. With the awkward hand motions. There's some really uncomfortable blocking in that scene.
Well, even stuff like, there are some games I don't know yet, he says to the girl. It's just like, and then him just eventually, like, falling into that flower bed like a dope. Yeah. Like, it's an episode designed to aggravate you about how trivial these rules are, and it's an amusing one just to laugh at, not to laugh with, but to laugh at physically.
It feels very original series, but like,
oh, yeah,
but like a bad take on the original series.
Season
updated
three,
updated 20, no, but not even season three, like just a bad take at recreating an original series episode 20 years later.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, season three has some duds, but I feel like overall season three episodes are still more entertaining.
Benjamin, what would it take you to dress like the Ito as featured in Justice?
It would take quite a bit, my friends.
Mm. I thought it would just be like one shot of vodka. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this episode is a train wreck, but it's a fascinating train wreck, like Fortunate Son or whatever from Voyager. Not so much fun, though. The Dauphin, I think, is a real dud. I think this is a truly boring episode of television.
Is the episode a dud, or Wesley's writing?
I think everything about it is a dud. I don't think the romance is interesting.
No.
I think there is one scene that redeems, not even redeems the episode, but makes the episode, gives us something to talk about that's positive, and that is the scenes, the montage of Wesley going around asking for love advice from the crew.
I do appreciate Worf's love advice, which pretty much amounts to yelling at the woman.
Yeah.
I thought the Riker Guinan stuff was very awkward.
But that's what was great, is how awkward it was.
Well, just like Riker and Guinan going back and forth and Wesley just sitting there like dumbfounded, like, I'll leave it to you.
Gosh,
guys.
Golly.
But, and here's the thing. That's his first love.
Yeah.
It's an energy ball.
Right. Well, I could relate to that.
For first love was an energy ball.
That's right.
Good for you, Cameron.
Thank you.
I don't know. There's nothing special about this romance, really. And here's the thing. Like, of course, you're enamored with, like, you know, whatever girl or guy who strikes your fancy at that age, you know? So it just feels as if we're, like, going through the motions of something that we know inevitably what's going to happen with this relationship.
Yeah.
I think that takes away so much tension.
I think there's also the problem that ultimately Next Generation is not that interested in telling, like, a pubescent love story.
No.
Like, it's just not. It's which is why they're throwing all this stuff with, like, eight monsters attacking Worf and what have you. Like, it's just, like, it's not a show for that sort of story, really.
Then why do it at all, then?
That's the question. Why do it at all?
You know, it was
Season 2, man. The wheels were off the
train. Yeah. Well, but you do have great lines, like Wesley saying goodbye to his girlfriend, saying, offering her some chocolate, saying, "A taste to remember me by." Yeah. I'm going to start using that one on my girlfriend.
Well, good luck. Let me know how that works.
Some of these lines taken out of context is just gold.
Yeah. Or even within context.
Pure gold.
It's pure gold here. Well, and even let's talk about other issues with episodes of Derision. I recall the battle where Wesley's able to just figure everything out, lickety split, when you're dealing with, like, the best crew in the fleet.
Right.
You've got Naked Now, where he's just being a real annoying kid who takes over main engineering because of his mad skills.
Right.
I don't know. I can understand why people were not in the Wesley love wagon.
And then there's Evolution, where he creates nanites that, like, take over the ship.
Yeah.
He's kind of trying to hide it. And it's like, we went from this kind of yippy skippy kid who really wanted to be a member of the crew to now just, like, hiding things that are endangering lives.
Yeah.
It's like a very inconsistent writing of that character.
How many fans do you think cheered? There's that episode, was it Sarek when Wesley shows up late for this concert and Crusher slaps him in the face?
Think so.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, the writers were trying to let the fans live vicariously through Crusher.
Well, it seems at a certain point the writers just began to make fun of Wesley.
Yes.
Like,
and that did not serve him well at all.
No, because they're in the episode A Hollow Pursuit.
Oh, yeah.
He's like this, like, spoiled kid eating pie that Crusher is threatening to spank.
Yes.
And it's like, are you serious? Like, this is a character you want the audience to like?
But don't you even feel bad for, like, this 17-year-old actor who has to do that sort of garbage and then...
Sort of?
Well, but then he has to go to school or, like, I don't know. Just being exposed to this, it's just like, geez, guys.
Do you think his character was, like, didn't have as good a long-term vision as some of the other characters? Or do you think some of this just developed as it kind of went along?
Well, okay, let me just bring up something Cam said at the beginning, where your supposition was that there was a loose arc or journey in mind for Wesley. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're alluding to is the traveler.
Arc, yeah.
I don't think there's anything loose about it. I think they just made it up all along. I don't think the writers ever had any intention of capping Wesley's journey off with the traveler.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just found it convenient. Right. Every single time that he was brought back. So that's why, because here's the thing, we're in an era of television where you just do your pilot episode and just figure things out from there. You don't really have, like, this long-term serialized arc in your head. Things work themselves as they go along. With Wesley, I don't know, maybe the idea was, like, he was just going to stick around the ship for 7 years and just keep being, like, the junior officer.
Well, that's what Encounter at Farpoint would kind of point to, because you have that scene of, like, Wesley coming onto the bridge and then annoying Picard and getting chased off the bridge.
Yes.
So it's more, like, that episode sells more the concept that Wesley is going to be a kid who's trying to get the respect of the captain. Where, I mean, and that does happen throughout the series, but, yeah, like, the Traveler stuff, I feel like the Traveler sets up a vague fact about Wesley that could be paid off or couldn't. Either way, they could just say he's special because he's really smart and could be a great Starfleet officer, or they could go where they went.
Honestly, I think they brought the Traveler in for one episode. They never had any intention of bringing him back. It was just like,
they waited a while.
Well, I'm just saying they just needed an episode, a way to solve the episode issues somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, get the Traveler to tell Wesley he's special.
Yeah.
But what's the point of that then? If there's no...
Because it was season one. Like, the writers had no clue what they were doing. I think Gene Roddenberry was a little, like, he was losing it. Like, he just did not have a good grasp on reality or good TV writing at that point.
It's like you bring him on the bridge, so you kind of foreshadow that he's going to end up there somehow, right?
Yeah.
But then you have, moments later, you have the Traveler come in and tell him he's some kind of interphasal...
Yeah.
You know, so it's confusing, right?
Yeah, because when the Traveler talks to Picard in... Is it Picard or Riker? I can't remember. In Where No One Has Gone Before... he really emphasizes this kid is special.
Right.
Not like, this kid's really talented. He's going to be a good Starfleet officer. He's like, this kid is unique. Well, I mean, what does that mean?
Well, and that's why I think it's good that Ron Moore had the foresight to kick him out of Starfleet Academy. If he is really unique, what is he doing, you know, at the helm of a starship?
I'm curious, do you think that there was a way, because I think we all agree the Traveler arc was not done well. Do you think that could have been a good arc? Like, do you think had they decided to go forward in that direction, the direction they did, it could have been done well?
The Traveler's character wasn't fleshed out well enough for that to have any kind of...
Do you think part of the issue is maybe the casting of the Traveler?
But the storytelling of his, there just isn't enough information. Like, what do we know about Talifacy? Nothing.
Yeah.
Well, his people, like, his species, like, we don't know anything about that.
Well, it seems like they just, like, hug computers and vibrate.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really understand.
Was that you and your ball of energy a young man?
Yeah, Friday night.
Okay.
Eric Menyuk, who played the Traveler, I'm assuming that's the pronunciation of the name.
I thought that was Menyuk, but...
Sure, well, either way.
It was Eric.
Yeah. You know, as we've said, he was the second choice for Data, or he was in the running for Data. Do you think he had a grasp on this character?
No, but I don't think the writers did either.
Yeah.
And whoever was directing him, they were like, okay, go for it.
Like, I had no interest in learning more about him. That's the thing. Like, it didn't want even...
And this is a podcast that talks about Vedic Braille every week.
Yeah.
We found Vedic Braille more interesting than the Traveler.
What I found the most interesting thing is how is he able to use all the ship controls with those giant fingers of his?
Yeah.
It seemed like...
Well, did you even understand the role of the Traveler in that first episode? Why he's hanging around with Kaczynski that well?
Something about how he wanted to
travel.
And it was a good excuse for him to help these starships move by giving them upgrades.
It seems like a questionable strategy to me.
Well, especially if you can bend space and time at will.
Yeah.
But, okay, so we have a character like Q, who... You know, he's omnipotent, but we want to see more of that character. That character is well written.
Right.
So why aren't we feeling the same way about the Traveler, who has these kind of...
I think maybe it's a performance issue where I think
John DeLancey's a little more charismatic.
Yeah. Well, exactly though, and it's just
and they're also interested in exploring Q.
Yeah.
So.
But and here's the thing: maybe if they gave like the Traveler like some actual interesting character beats,
like I'm gonna ask you both: give me some traits of the Traveler.
He's really into Wesley.
Okay. He's got
a big forehead.
Big like, fingers.
Personality traits, not physical.
He's really into Wesley. He's
soft-spoken.
I really can't tell you much more other than that.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that this character shows up in three episodes informs the arc of a major character, and no one can give me personality traits of him.
And Robin Loeffler, she was only in two episodes, only one with Wesley. I think she did way more for that character than the Traveler did.
Yeah.
So.
And, I don't necessarily like to blame the actor, because obviously the writing in season one introducing him was clunky, but...
Yeah.
So are we seeing the downfall of Wesley Crusher is directly intertwined with the Traveler's...
I would say the arc of Wesley is... I think the downfall of Wesley comes early, and it comes just from not really knowing what to do with a child on the bridge.
Will Wheaton, I think, nailed it when he said, you know, the writers just could not execute this idea.
Yeah.
And I think it came from on high, as Gene Roddenberry wanted a boy genius on the bridge. He thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
I don't think the writers were able to... Do you guys think you're pretty much setting yourself up for failure with the concept of Wesley as Gene Roddenberry dictated?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I just can't imagine it working on any Star Trek series.
Again, I think you have to be a very strong writer and a very strong director to get a really compelling child performance, especially a series like this, which... people have a certain idea of what they want from Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it's not like Boys Own Adventure.
I mean, well, I don't know if you're quite there yet, but I mean, Cam, on Voyager, we do get some child characters.
Counting the days.
Yeah. But I mean, of course, we have Naomi Wildman. I thought her performance from Scarlett Palmer's was perfectly fine. Nothing egregious there. We also have Icheb, the reformed Borg drone.
Right.
Who Seven takes under her wing.
Right.
That's a
decade later, though, in terms of child acting, or 15 years, basically.
I'm saying you can integrate, like, child characters into Star Trek. It still works, but you have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or you at least have to have a much better vision of what these characters are supposed to do. Naomi Wildman isn't, like, going in down to main engineering and telling B'Elanna Torres what to do.
Yeah.
Or showing B'Elanna Torres up, or anything like that.
There's also the issue that, like, when Gene Roddenberry was doing Star Trek The Next Generation, he was modeling on the original Star Trek, which was incredibly episodic. So, Jake, Sisko, Nog, these are characters who are allowed to develop and change. Wesley is a lot shakier because that's not really what they have planned out in the first place.
Yeah.
I love Nog's development on DS9.
Yeah, it's like fantastic.
He starts off as this, like, you know, kid in a bar, and then he ends up, you know, having all these adventures, getting his leg cut off or shot off or whatever. Like, all these things that happen to him.
Yeah.
And by the end, he ends up with Chief O'Brien's job.
Yeah.
Would you ever suspect that from the kid?
No.
Who stole Odo's bucket?
But that's a great payoff for that character, which is something I never felt like I got with Wesley's character.
Are you satisfied with the end of Wesley's journey?
No, I've never been okay with that.
But is it because, like, Journey's End is such... I think it's one of the most problematic episodes of Star Trek. And it seems... I know Americans use different terms than Canadians do for Aboriginal people, for First Nations people, but it was very awkward to hear the word Indian used repeatedly in the 24th century.
Oh, this is great. I just have to bring this up. How the chief brings up the incident that happened on Earth, you know, 400 years ago.
Yeah.
And then Picard's like, I'm not familiar with this. And Troy's like, oh, I am. this Betazoid knows about 16th, 17th century.
Well, did you also notice that everyone in that tribal council, they're all men? They had no women in this tribal council. It was just like, wow, that's not problematic. I don't know. That whole episode made me feel very uncomfortable. I was satisfied that Wesley's journey was not to be a Starfleet officer.
You like that?
That made sense to me.
But it's a really unsatisfying way to end that character. Because
I remember watching it at the time, and I agree. I was not happy with how they ended that character. And looking back on it,
he gets poochied. Like, he's like, I'm going back to my home planet.
Yo, Mr. S.
Yeah. Like, and you know what? In TNG in Season 7, they did that a couple times, because they did the same thing with Ensign Ro.
Yeah.
Where they have an episode where it's like a rapid, like, get her out of the series, you know, episode.
Yeah.
And that one's a little better, but...
What about the introduction of Picard's long-lost son?
Oh, great episode.
Mountain climbing.
Yeah.
But why does Wesley need such a finite conclusion?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Like, why can't it just be left up in interpretation? Like, why does he have to...
I think it's because he was a recurring character, so they want to have one final Wesley episode.
Yeah.
And they want to give, I guess, some sort of finality as to what was going on with Wesley, because he'd kind of been inconsistent. Like, he'd, you know...
Guys, I have it. I think what they were trying to do is set up a Traveler film. So they wanted to bring him and Wes back for, say, Star Trek 9.
Starring Eric Menick.
Yeah.
I would go see that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
I also want to talk about another moment that's just a funny one.
Yeah.
Which is the episode Hide in Q, where Riker gets Q's power and creates a 25-year-old Wesley.
Yes.
That is an amazing moment.
See, I thought you were going to say, and Wesley gets bayoneted by the soldiers on the planet. It's amazing to compare the look of 25-year-old Wesley to the look of 40-year-old Will Wheaton now. But, there you go.
It was a very big moment. You know, that movie big.
That's true. Yeah, we should find out what that kid is looking like now, who Tom Hanks took over for. Well, guys, I'm just curious. As we wrap up here, I mean, let's go through what are our favorite episodes featured that are Wesley-centric. Benjamin, let's start with you, sir.
The Game, it was one of my favorite episodes growing up. Watch it again today. Still like it. You know, it still holds up. I also liked First Duty. That was a great episode, just because we don't see what happens too much in Star Trek Academy, really, right? So I love these kind of episodes where they kind of zoom in telling a story that what goes on in the Academy. And I don't know. I mean, I watched a handful episodes before this podcast, and none of the ones I picked were honestly that great.
Right. Yeah.
Besides the ones that I've just mentioned.
Yeah. Well, Cam, what's your favorite Wes episode?
First Duty is my favorite episode.
Yeah. Mm.
But you know what? I will give some points to Samaritan Snare, because I think a lot of the Picard Wesley conversation stuff is really interesting.
Okay.
So.
I mean, for me, I would have to give it to First Duty myself. I think that's a great showcase for the actor. It shows like true conflict between the main characters, which you don't often find on Star Trek. So it's great to see.
It, would it be a stretch to say that when Wesley goes from his gray onesie and puts on the uniform for the first time, it's almost badass? Would that
I thought it was a great scene.
I don't know. It's like a kid in his jammies, like that whole series, until he gets like the cadet uniform.
Yeah, well,
no, he gets the ensign uniform.
Yeah.
And then he goes off to the academy and gets the cadet uniform.
That, I can get behind the cadet uniform. The other one's not so much.
It no, always... the ensign uniform, though.
Oh, okay.
That's what Ben's talking about.
Oh, right,
when
right,
he gets
yeah.
the actual ensign uniform, and so he's not in his gray onesie
yeah.
anymore.
I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
I remember that scene where he actually walked on the bridge for the first time in the ensign uniform, and I thought it looked like it was a great moment, you mm-hmm. know, for the character. I bought it.
They really do dress him like a child, though. Like an infant.
I want Wes sweaters yeah. to wear to the next Star Trek convention.
Remember his puffy shirt? He had a puffy shirt as a you know, when he in the earlier season 2 or something like that. It was like a turtleneck with like a puffy.
Is that the one where he's throwing snowballs in the holodeck?
No, was that where no one has gone before? I think so.
He wore a lot of puffy sweaters yeah. and all that. Like that was pretty much his entire wardrobe. Thank God I don't live in the 24th century.
Very true. Now, before signing off, I have one final Cam Fiction moment. In the Voyager novel, Enemy of My Enemy, Wesley appears in Chakotay's spirit walk.
It makes sense to me because, you know, was it LaConta who is his guide that the Traveler disguised as? He was talking about vision quests. It would make sense that he would cross paths with Chakotay.
We know what LaConta's vision was.
Wesley Crusher
in a hot and sweaty vision room.
That's true.
So on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. You can also leave a review for us on our iTunes page. It helps us with listings in terms of Star Trek podcasts, which will in turn get us riches, money, and finally power.
Cam, something weird happened. Like I think like 2/3 of our reviews disappeared off our iTunes page.
I think they're on my phone.
Okay. I was just looking it up earlier, but I don't know. What I'm trying to do, and Cam's apparently not trying to do, is encourage people to go leave reviews. Oh. I would encourage all you guys.
Well, yes. I mean, yes. They are all gone on my phone as well.
Guys, it's a free show. All you have to do is give us 5 stars, leave reviews. That really does help us with searches and just reaching out to more listeners like you guys that are smart and beautiful like all of you.
Right. So you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Voyager novel, Enemy of My Enemy, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's REPORTON, and as in Naked Wesley at a Betazoid wedding.
Yowza. And I'm B as in Beverly, _YONG.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Wesley?
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley. Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Transfer complete.